Falcons fans, welcome back to another edition of the Falcon Cast podcast here on AtlantaFalcons.com. Joining me every week, Daniel Cox, fresh off his 40-yard dash time, beating me once again this year. We'll talk about that a little later. Jay Adams here from AtlantaFalcons.com. Lucky enough to be joined today by Bleacher Report's NFL Draft lead writer, Matt Miller. And if you have the Twitter, and you're on the Twitter, his Twitter name is NFL Draft Scout. And if you're going to have that Twitter name, you better live up to it. And Matt does. He's one of my favorite follows. So, Matt, welcome to the Falcon Cast. I know that you were just up in Indianapolis at the Combine. How are you recovering?
I'm trying to recover still. I pretty much came home and immediately started working on an updated seven-round mock draft post-Combine and an updated top 300 players. So I'm looking forward to the weekend pretty heavily here, guys.
Yeah, easy stuff, you know, just a couple of guys out there I'm sure that you're keeping your eye on. So let's jump right in here. There were 73 SEC players at the Combine, the most from any single conference. There's obviously a lot of talent in the South, but what are the other factors happening within the SEC that help prepare guys to become good players in the NFL?
I think a lot of it is the coaching. You know, the SEC has been able to attract amazing coaches, whether it's Nick Saban, Les Miles, Kevin Sumlin. And I think that just ups the overall quality of the kids we're seeing come out of there. I think it also helps that it's largely a warm weather conference. And, you know, if you're an 18-year-old kid and you have a chance to go play at Michigan where it snows, I think it snows in Michigan 10 months out of the year, or you can go to Florida and Texas and Alabama and these sunny states. You know, it's an easy decision to make. So, if you look over the last 10 years, you know, the SEC has really dominated recruiting. So you have that nice marriage between excellent coaching, and these coaches are getting the best players in the country. And it fits that the SEC turns out, you know, the best draft prospects. I mean, they've won how many of the last national championships? So it's definitely become the power conference for sure.
Hey, Matt, one of the big stories / circuses last week was, Manti Te'o, and everything that comes along with him. You know, I'm just trying to think back. It seems like before all of this, you know, the fake dead girlfriend and all that stuff kind of began to happen, he was a first-round prospect, if I remember correctly. What did you see from him, you know, both on and off the field, and what maybe some things you heard as well from maybe some talking to some people last week at the Combine? Do you feel like teams are maybe starting to warm up to back up to him?
You know, I think some teams are warming back up. He handled the press conference very well. From everything I heard, he handled the individual interviews with teams very well. And that's really the key for him. You know, a lot's being made of this 4.8 that he ran in a 40-yard dash, and that's like such a non-factor. I mean, he's not a super fast linebacker, so I think everyone knew about what he was going to run. And it was somewhere in that 4.6 to 4.8 range. And so, we'll see. The key for Te'o, I thought, was coming to the Combine first and foremost, just getting out there and getting up in front of everyone. You know, 800 credentialed media members, and he stood up in front of everyone for 15 minutes and took unprepared questions. So I think that was a big help for him, just showing that he was courageous enough to face the media, and that he was honest and forthright, and he really was in control of his press conference. So those are the things that I think helped him most. Athletically, you know what you're getting with this kid. He's not a super athlete, like I said before, but he's quick. He only needs to run, 5 to 6 yards to make most plays, and that's where he lives, and he does well in that. I think he's a guy who's probably going to come off the board in the late first round. I don't think he'll get out of the first round. I think Baltimore would stop that if he happened to fall to pick number 32. But there's a lot of teams, the Falcons being one of them, who could consider him there in the first round.
Another position group that we're keeping an eye on is defensive tackles, defensive ends. You know, the Falcons struggles with stopping the run and rushing the passer, well documented over the last year and perhaps even further back. Who are some of the options that you see the Falcons being in play for at that number 30 pick at the defensive line positions, at the end of round one?
Well, it's a great year to need defensive linemen, luckily. The trouble might be a lot of them could come off the board pretty early. Looking at pick number 30, I think there's an outside shot that Alex Okafor from Texas is still on the board, and I think he'd be a fantastic fit for what the Falcons do. He's a versatile end who's been able to play on both left and right ends. I like Dayton Jones from UCLA a lot, but he may be a little bit too big to play D-end in a 4-3 scheme. He's a guy who's still growing, and he's about 280 pounds. Margus Hunt from SMU, a guy who really had a great combine, is someone who also could be in the mix there. Corey Limonaire from Auburn, I'm sure you guys saw him quite a bit in SEC, a really dynamic edge rusher. And then Sam Montgomery from LSU, who has some great athletic ability, but has some questions about his motor and his effort. Those would be the D-ends. D-tackle, I think the top guys are going to come off the board pretty quickly. So we're looking at potentially Jesse Williams from Alabama, a guy I know we highlighted today. Mm-hmm. And then Kawan Short from Purdue, who might be – I don't have him rated as a top 30 player, but I think if he's there and you want a three-technique defensive tackle who can rush the quarterback, who's better against the run, I think he's someone you're checking out for sure.
Hey, Matt, you know, we always go to the combine with, you know, all these top players that we're looking at. But who are some guys, maybe five guys or just a handful of players that, you know, kind of went to Indianapolis as somewhat unknowns, relatively speaking. And, you know, based on what they did, either, you know, performance-wise with the workouts or, you know, some of their interviews or whatever, left Indianapolis with, you know, a little bit more attention, maybe on the rise a little bit.
Well, I think the guy who caught everyone's attention first off was Tron Armstead, the tackle from Arkansas Pine Bluff, who ran like a 4.71 in the 40-yard dash, which is ridiculous. Like a man that size shouldn't be moving that fast. So he's someone who a lot of teams and guys like myself are going to have to come home and take another look at to see, you know, what can he do? Where's the upside at? I thought Syracuse safety Shamarco Thomas definitely helped himself with the 4.42 in the 40-yard dash, I think it was. He's just a guy who we have to figure out, is he an athlete or is he a football player? Because, you know, the film makes him look like an athlete. He's a bit small at 5'9", so trying to figure out how he projects is going to be the key. Brandon Williams, a guy I've really been hyping all year, a nose tackle from Missouri Southern, you know, just had a good all-around combine, did 30 reps on bench press, really showcasing his strength. You know, he's just a bowling ball type player who's built to play nose tackle. So he helped himself. Darius Slay, corner from Mississippi State, a guy who gets lost a bit in the shuffle because Jonathan Banks was lined up opposite him, but Slay helped himself a lot. He's just so smooth, so quick, that he's definitely moving himself up my board, and a guy who is probably going to come off in the top three rounds. And then finally, I would say Josh Boyce, a wide receiver from TCU, a guy who came out early. There's not a ton of film on him once Andy Dalton left that system. So he's a guy who is just an amazing athlete, probably an inside receiver, but his ability to accelerate before and after the catch is going to make him move up the board quite a bit.
Now, switching gears here a little bit, Matt, I want to get your opinion on what the Falcons did a couple of drafts ago with the trade up to number 6 overall to get Julio Jones. Obviously a trade because of how much the Falcons gave up, much scrutinized over the years, but I think at least the way I see it, we're starting to see that pay off in dividends, and I was wondering how you see that trade now in hindsight, giving up so much for one player, but then seeing that player start to produce at a very high level.
Well, I think looking at obviously what Julio Jones has been for the Falcons, you have to love what he has done. You know, he's been an instant impact, and that's what they wanted. You know, they wanted impact players, and they got one for sure. Looking at what the Browns turned that trade into, it hasn't been much. You know, they haven't been able to convert those picks into talent yet. So we'll see what happens. I think as of now, you know, clearly the Falcons have won in that trade, even though they did give up so many picks, you know, 5 picks total, I think it was, they gave up for him. But he's a guy who's worth it, I think. It's rare to find wide receivers who are as balanced as Julio is, who can do as much as he does before the catch, after the catch. He's one of the best blocking receivers in the NFL. He's incredibly strong in his routes. You know, he challenges catches. I think he's clearly one of the up-and-coming receivers in the league, and a guy who's going to be a top player for a long time. So I think looking at it right now, after 2 seasons, the Falcons have definitely won.
All right. That's great.
That's good news.
It is good news. The guy they picked, the Falcons drafted the year before that in 2010, Sean Weatherspoon, linebacker. We love him here in Falcons Nation, but I'm curious from a more national perspective, what do you kind of see him becoming, and maybe what do you anticipate coming up in his fourth season here in 2013?
Well, I'm a big fan of Sean Weatherspoon. You know, living in Missouri, I was able to watch him play in college as well. And I think he's just a tremendous athlete. You know, when you talk about wanting, you know, a 4-3 linebacker who can line up on the outside, I think Weatherspoon is kind of that prototypical guy. And he had some rough patches this year. I think you can look at the conference championship game against San Francisco as a game where he didn't have a heads-up performance, you know, a great game. But the thing for him is he's so balanced. You know, he can do a little bit of everything. You're not taking him off the field. You know, he's a guy who plays almost every snap, maybe actually played every snap for Atlanta this year. So that's valuable to have a guy who never comes off the field. He can cover. He can stop the run. I think he can, you know, he had 3 sacks this year. You can even go get the quarterback a little bit if you need to use him in that role. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Weatherspoon as the talent around him gets a little bit better. I think that's an area where the Falcons need to focus in the offseason, you know, getting a D tackle who can keep guys off him, you know, maybe upgrading at the other 2 linebacker positions. But I think Weatherspoon is an anchor for that defense and a guy that you are definitely going to try to build around.
Well, Matt, this is great stuff. Before we let you go, we know that you spend a ridiculous amount of time looking at tape, looking at players, looking at all the intangibles, all the numbers, that kind of stuff. Daniel and I, last week, ran our 40-yard dashes, and Daniel beat me once again. He ran a 5.9 in the 40. I came in, I improved a little bit, 6.1 up from 6.2. I was able to shave that tenth of a second off,
yeah.
And I was wondering if you were looking at both Daniel and I for your big board. Where exactly would we fall on your in your opinion? Where do you see him and I based on our 40 times?
Well, you know, I track about 300 players each year for the draft, so I would say you guys would probably come in about 301 and 302.
You know, that's
off my board.
Yeah.
You know, the improvement is encouraging. You know, shows that you're coachable, that you're still in your prime. You know, so we'll have to get a full workout video of you guys. I like to see you do the bench and everything else.
See,
so,
that's what I tried to convince Daniel to do the bench, and he said no. We stayed away from some of the more agility drills because we're both getting old and we're worrying about breaking something. Which I think is a valid concern for both of us.
Yes.
But I wouldn't tell too many teams that, though, that we're a little concerned about.
Well, this is the bright spot. He said 301, 302. I'll take that. You know, I was expecting, you know, borderline priority undrafted free agent, that sort of thing. So I'll take it.
Well, Matt, we appreciate
it. You should feel encouraged about your pro potential.
Yes.
But I think the Falcons would miss you in your current job.
There you go. There you go. Well, draft eligible for 3 years and counting, I guess, for both of us.
And counting.
Well, Matt, thanks so much. We really appreciate it. All your assessments. Fantastic work on all the combine coverage. And folks, again, please go follow Matt on Twitter, NFL Draft Scout. Matt, thanks again for joining us. Hopefully we can get you back on before the draft.
Looking forward to it, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks.
Thank you, Matt.
So that was great stuff from Matt Miller. Matt is, as I've said, just fantastic with his assessments. Very detailed, always looking at the film, pouring it over.
Absolutely.
And so good to hear from him.
Yeah, he's a rising star, I think.
I agree.
Some of this media stuff we do.
There's going to be a point where we're going to have to go through some people before we get to talk to him.
Yeah, it won't be a simple text message anything like that anymore.
Right, exactly. All right, so we are going to get into our now popular Falcons Flash.
Falcons Flash.
Is that what we've decided? Are we going to go with that?
It seems to work right now.
All right.
Until further notice.
Right. It's all we have.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what we're doing. Daniel and I will share one story from the internet on the Falcons or a facsimile thereof that caught our eye this week. And so you've got kind of an interesting one. I think I'll let you go first again this week.
Okay.
You caught a pretty good one.
First of all, I have access to all the transcripts from the combine that have been done. The PFWA, it's Pro Football Writers of America, did a fantastic job putting hundreds of combine transcripts together. So I got Thomas Dimitrov's here. And, you know, and in these situations, it's not always, you know, Atlanta-based guys that ask these general managers questions. They just come to the podium, and whoever wants to go and ask can ask them questions. So sometimes, you know, national guys are working on a story about, you know, the NFL in general or whatever, and they'll throw their question in. The question to Thomas was about the Falcons' use of analytics and scouting process. And when we say analytics, we're talking about things that, you know, more statistics-based scouting process of, you know, players and, you know, even position groups in general. And he had some interesting things to say. He said analytics are always a big part of the process, and he said he definitely acknowledged that in the past, some of the old guard of the NFL, so to speak, have, you know, kind of kept that aspect of scouting, that role in scouting off to the side and kind of kept it quiet and maybe ignored it even a little bit, but it's certainly coming coming to the forefront a little bit more. It's being used a lot more. He didn't say directly, you know, to what lengths that the Falcons use analytics, but I feel like just based on listening to Coach Smith talk for years now, and how he discusses just preparation on a week-to-week basis in terms of, you know, statistical analysis of, like, points inside a game, like a third down and two situation, it seems like he's very in tune with the percentages of that kind of stuff. So it seems natural to me to kind of, you know, correlate that to scouting as well. And, you know, he said, Thomas said, it plays a role. It's how we evaluate a lot of our players as well. It's a supplement, and it goes back to making sure you have all the tools necessary, and hopefully you have a little bit of an edge over somebody else because you have a different approach. And, you know, I think that different approach aspect of what Thomas and what he brings and his scouting team brings to the Falcons, I think, is one of the reasons he got hired in Atlanta. He's definitely, you know, off the beat. You know, he walks to a different drum, so to speak, or marches to a different drum, I guess, drum beat, so to speak. But, you know, just we're starting to hear more about that analytics aspect, and I think that it's interesting, and it was interesting to hear Thomas speak about it.
That's good stuff. See, yeah. This is why I couldn't be an NFL GM.
Oh, yeah?
Because numbers, I can't.
Yeah,
my brain doesn't see them the right way.
No, I hear you. And we do our best to take statistics and try to view them in a different way. And
we try
introduce
because
them.
They're important.
Yeah,
but when I see something, I just like, no, it doesn't make sense. I failed math once. I'm not afraid.
Oh, really?
To admit it.
Well, are you talking high school?
Yeah, it was like 10th grade.
Well, I did. I failed.
I had to take summer
college.
School. I had to take summer school. Yeah. You don't see too many future GMs, you know, boasting about their summer school days.
Yeah, or their failed classes.
Their failed
any
classes.
Point in time in their school career, but no, I did it in college. I didn't do so well, and I think that's one reason why I ended up here. So, thanks math for that.
Thanks math. Shouts out to math.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll get on to mine. We'll deal with some more numbers here, and I'll try my
Speaking
best.
Speaking of analytics.
Yeah, try my best not to muddle through them. This isn't necessarily like a story or anything like that that I found on the internet, but just watching the combine over the 4 days, one of the things that stuck out to me is just how fast today's athletes are and are getting, and it seems to be they just keep getting faster, keep evolving, so to speak, into just guys who are putting up ridiculous numbers.
Yeah.
And I'll try my best to prove it here, but all right, so Chris Johnson, 2008, he's
right,
running back for the Titans. Runs his 40 at the combine, 4.24.
Fastest time. Well, yep.
Fastest time in the digital age of the combine.
Yes.
I know there's some there pre digital timer that
right.
You know there was some
they just count in their heads back then, right?
Yeah,
Mississippi.
Basically, I think Deion Sanders won. Deion Sanders would contend that he ran like a 4.1 or something like that. But that was all hand time stuff.
Yeah.
Like they've got it down to a pretty good science here.
Much like we had last week.
Yes, exactly. our times would not hold up in the new age of combine measurements. But all right, so Chris Johnson, 2008, runs his 40, 4.24. All right, so this year you've got wide receiver Marquise Gooden ran the fastest time out of anybody with 4.27, just short of Chris Johnson's mark. Okay, so...
And that's a fast time, but he's a wide receiver.
You're right. So here's where I was starting to get really amazed, is how fast these bigger guys have become.
Yeah.
And we see, Matt Miller just mentioned it, Teron Armstead, the offensive tackle from Arkansas Pine Bluff, runs the fastest time ever for an offensive lineman at the combine with a 4.71. That's amazing.
That's a big man moving.
Okay. Yeah. What did Manti Te'o run?
4.8.
4.8. So an offensive tackle beat a linebacker in straight speed.
Yeah.
Like, think about that. All right. But then you look at another position group, defensive ends. All right, and your defensive ends, you could be potentially defensive end, potentially outside linebacker. So you're talking about a little faster group, but there are two defensive ends, Trevardo Williams and Barcavius Mingo, both run sub 4.6s. And then you have three more defensive ends that run right at 4.6, Margus Hunt being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then, okay, so you got Armstead, runs a 4.71, but Lane Johnson, offensive tackle from Oklahoma, runs a 4.72. Barely misses tying that record.
Yeah, and that's important, I think, because and I was reading something about this earlier this week as well about the evolution of the offensive linemen, especially tackles, and
yeah.
This whole read option pistol stuff. And while in the past, you know, we had guys like Jonathan Ogden, who you wanted an athletic guy that's just a mountain giant of a man. But then, you know, it's kind of evolving into a sleeker lineman that can kind of get out and move. And there was a discussion of angles and stuff like that. And these guys need to be able to kind of hit those angles and be really be able to move on their feet really well. And Lane Johnson and Armstead for sure seem to demonstrate that.
Right. And you're absolutely right. Just with that evolution of the offense, your needs change. As we've seen in years past here with the Falcons. But I look back through some of the previous marks for offensive linemen in the combine and at that 40 time, and the previous best was right around 4.9.
Wow.
Which is, it's amazing to see how much better. And what are we talking about? We're talking about 0.2 seconds,
yeah.
Right? But that's the difference between making a block and not making a
this
block.
This is true. That's a good point.
And so, to me,
it's a game of inches, right?
It really is.
Or seconds, and milliseconds.
Some, you know, milliseconds, yeah. Something like that. Yeah. But I don't know. To me, I was just looking at the 40, and I think people put way too much stock into the 40, and I certainly try not to. But I just thought it was interesting, just from an athletic standpoint. The human body is an amazing thing.
Yeah, it is.
And to see just how much faster that athletes are becoming nowadays. Because this stuff, if you go back and you look 20, 30 years ago, unheard of, these numbers.
Yeah, this would be like alien stuff.
Yeah. I mean, so anyways, I just wonder in like 20 years, are we going to be looking back at these times and being like, oh,
really?
Are we going to have our like
that's,
first...
That's interesting.
Are we going to have sub 4 40s?
Yeah.
Know?
I mean, like, will 4.1 be the...
Moving
the,
sidewalks.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. And laser beams on sharks.
Yeah. Never mind. I was just reminded of a TV show, but we're going to get that offline. Lane Johnson, 6'6", 303 pounds.
Running at 4.7 40. And that's amazing to me.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing to
it's
me.
It's ridiculous. He had an outstanding combine, by the way.
Yeah.
He said he was a top performer in a top performer, so I guess that's like a top five finisher. In 40-yard dash, vertical, broad jump, 3-cone drill, 20-yard shuttle. That's... You're right, though. I mean, it's impressive that these guys come in here with such incredible athletic ability.
Yeah.
And I'm, my opinion of that is starting to change, especially the 40. Like, I feel like if there's an expectation that a guy hits a certain number and he fails to do it, how much of that does it speak to his inability to prepare for what's arguably the most important day of his life?
You're right. And I think that is definitely something that they look at. You know, you've got
these guys, you can kind of figure where they're going to run. And like you said, if they're below that, it doesn't necessarily tell you a whole lot about them athletically, but I think off the field, you're absolutely right. Like, how motivated were they to get into the gym? Yeah. And
or at least stay where they were.
Right.
You know?
And that's why we were talking last week with Pat about IMG and places like that. Just these basically, they teach these guys the combine.
Absolutely.
How to succeed at the combine. Absolutely. And these guys that go there of their own volition tend to do pretty well in the combine.
Maybe we should go down there for a week next week.
I was just thinking that.
Trip to Florida doesn't sound too bad.
That would be amazing. That's a good idea. We'll see. All right, so let's wrap it up here, and we're going to give you our five players that have emerged as the most intriguing after the combine. Just our own personal opinions, just looking at everything. You want me to go first?
Sure, go first.
All right. Okay, so we'll start off with Tavon Austin.
Yes.
West Virginia. I think he had a fantastic combine.
He's the guy that said he was going to do this too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you can call your shot, as we've seen with Babe Ruth.
Yes.
You're doing pretty well.
Yes.
The guy, you know, Daniel, you and I talk all the time about these guys who we end up fixated on them for one reason or another. And 2 years ago, it was like Ryan Kerrigan kind of had a love affair with him.
Yes.
And then last year, who did we have last year? Who was the guy that we couldn't get enough of?
Oh, goodness.
Well, we were in the second round, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Oh, I can't remember.
Seems like we discussed tight end a lot.
Kobe Fleener.
Oh, yes.
It was a Fleener kid.
Yes.
Who ended up going to Detroit, I think.
Indianapolis.
Indianapolis, sorry.
Yes.
Sorry. You're right. Yeah. Okay. So, anyways, for me, this year, I think my guy is Margus Hunt.
Starting to see that.
Out of SMU. And I'm trying not to be too fixated on his combine performance because it was outstanding. He crushed it. Mm-hmm. He's raw, you know. We still don't know a lot about him, but, you know, they called this guy the Eastern Block because he had 17 block kicks in his college career.
Huh.
Okay?
That's
incredible. 6'8" as a defensive end. Yeah. I like him. I love his size. I think he's one of those guys where, you know, if he fits your system or if he comes close, like, you pull the trigger on him because he's one of those guys that you can.
He seems like he's worth the risk.
Yes, he seems that way. Now, we don't know if that'll translate. All that stuff is on tape, but you know, another guy who, you know, he's from Estonia. He's not from around here, not from around these parts. So he's only been playing football for a relatively short period of time.
Yeah.
But there's tape enough out there to get a pretty good read on him. And so he's an interesting prospect to me. I think after the combine, he performed so well that he's a guy that I want to keep my eye on. Mm-hmm. Another guy, running back from Auburn, Ontario McCaleb, 4.34, 40-yard dash. I heard a couple of things about him, just how impressive he was looking during the combine. So more of a, you know, he's not a first rounder or anything.
But
he's one of those guys that later on down the line you could maybe take a look at. Missouri linebacker Xavier Gooden.
Uh-huh.
I love this kid. Just a freak. Killed the combine as well. 4.4740. Just a really good, and the tape is there on him, too.
Yeah.
And then the last guy, total freak of nature. And actually, what's funny is that I covered him when he was in high school.
Oh, yeah?
Over at Washington County High School here in
Georgia. I thought that might have been the case.
Yeah. Cornelius Washington, the linebacker slash defensive end out of Georgia, who killed the bench press with 36 reps and then came out and showed, hey, you know, I'm strong, but I've also got speed. He ran a 4.5 40, which I think was number two at the linebacker position behind Xavier Gooden. Xavier Gooden, of course, leading the linebackers in the 40, but Cornelius Washington, just an absolute freak, totally athletic kid. I like him a lot, but, you know, he's more of a mid-round guy as well. Although, you know, who knows? Could continue climbing, and we'll see what happens with him.
Yeah.
But those are my five. You know, they're not necessarily, you know, most intriguing for that number 30 pick, but I think intriguing for, you know, down the line.
Hunt might be a guy in the mix.
Well, of
there.
Course.
Yeah.
Of course. But absolutely. Some of these other guys, you know, I was trying to think a little outside the box here, Dan.
Absolutely. As was I.
Okay.
As was I.
Well, lay yours on us.
I also went with Cornelius Washington, and we did not compare lists prior to this. But, yeah, he was definitely, like you said, top performer in the 40, 4.55, and the bench press, 36 reps. Also, the vertical jump and the broad jump. He wasn't as productive in college. He was almost like who is this guy? Is what I was hearing out of the combine once he started performing and doing his workouts. But he began 2012 on the Butkus Award watch list, which is the nation's best linebacker. So, and he was like a top 150 recruit coming out of wherever he was,
Washington County.
In Georgia. So, you know, talent's been there. He's definitely been on some people's radars before, but he, you know, he definitely went up there and to the combine and, you know, turned out a good performance. So that helps his case, and he's definitely got a guy that's worth watching now. For me, now Davis, Arkansas running back, I'm kind of starting to love the guy, to be honest with you. As a sophomore in 2010, he had 1,300 yards, 13 touchdowns. He was considered one of the best running backs in the country, and then, of course, in 2011, he broke his ankle and he was out for the whole season. Looked like last season he was kind of coming back from that, and then there was a ridiculous amount of turmoil with that whole team last year. Ran a 4.37 40, pretty nice. He's a big kid, like solid built guy. Could be like a second, third round running back, and if there's a need for the Falcons there, he's a guy I'd be impressed to see, because he's not just a fast guy. He can run into the line and he can move people as well. I'm still with that guy, the kid Tyron Matthew, cornerback out of LSU.
Oh, he talked the Honey Badger.
The Honey Badger. Yeah. He talked a good game in terms of his media interview. And I always like to see how those guys handle themselves in that. He discussed he was up front, much like Teo. Maybe he took a page out of Teo's book, or at least the book that coached Teo. just completely admitted his mistakes and just owned up to everything and said, you know what, I was just a dumb kid, and I need to do a better job, and I'm working on that. And he's, you know, just based on kind of what he's doing in preparation work. We talked about it last week, working with Patrick Peterson. He's clearly, you know, doing what he can to improve his stock, so to speak. I think his stock's kind of a mid-round, low-round guy. But he performed well in workouts, ran a low 4.5 40, performed well in some of the position-specific drills as well. And he's a natural football player. I like that. And this is really interesting. I read something a source said on the day that they were working out. A lot of his defensive back group that he was in, that they were going around the field, guys started naturally following him. He sort of began to stand out as a leader among that group because of his charisma and leadership. Another guy I like, Darius Slay, is one of the guys that Matt mentioned. Mm-hmm. 4.36 40, fastest among all defensive backs. And there's another running back, Giovanni Bernard. They call him Gio, North Carolina running back. A lot of people felt like he looked like one of the best backs at the combine. They compared him to Ray Rice. Highly productive in college, and he's a punt returner.
Yeah,
two touchdowns, I believe, in his career, or maybe even just last season. I don't recall that, but two touchdowns as a punt returner.
And he's a small guy, too. He's not exactly your big bruising guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I like him, too. I like the way he's put together, and, you know, who knows what the ceiling is for that kid.
Yeah. But those are my five guys.
I like them.
I like them, too.
Well, obviously,
they're
you
on
do.
My list.
They're on your list. They wouldn't be on your list if you didn't like them.
Yeah. They wouldn't be.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So our let's wrap it up here.
Okay.
But I'm going to give you the chance to go ahead and gloat.
You know what?
I didn't do a whole lot of smack talking
last
week on the show. I did say that I'd be a little bit of an unknown. It turned out that, you know, I was pretty known.
I think the real unknown was Miss Morgan.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that, let's address that. You know, Morgan... We run. You and I run. We get our two cracks at it.
Yeah.
Your first one was 5'9". Mm-hmm. Your second one was 6'3".
which
I don't even know what happened on that. If there's one thing I can hang my hat on is I did the better the second time than I did
which
the first
time. That's impressive. I don't know. You've seen the video. I lost complete control of my body.
You did.
Yet you
still beat me when I was trucking it. And that's what I don't get. And that's why I've got to call our timer, Matt Haley, into question here. Because I wonder. I felt like I was moving, but of course, you know, when you get this much weight moving that fast, it all feels fast, but it's actually very slow. very snail-like. But, I was impressed with Morgan because we went out and we had our athletic shorts on and Morgan wasn't even
stretched,
planning on running.
We'd spent 20 minutes stretching.
20 minutes stretching and warming up.
Doing
and,
some sprints, warming up.
And then we coaxed Morgan into going. She's like, oh, I don't have the right shoes on. So take your shoes off.
Yeah.
She's in her work clothes, goes out in her socks.
Yep.
And runs a 5.81. Beats both of us.
Yep. It's good for her. I mean, she's a girl. She's tiny, right? Isn't that what she's supposed to do?
More aerodynamic? I don't know, man.
I'm going to stick with that's what I expected out of Morgan. So, but here, this is what I'm going to go ahead and say. This is recorded. So once I put it out there, I have to live up to it.
You do.
I'm
going to
go ahead and I'm gonna call a number.
Oh, okay.
And this is what I'm going to do next year.
Okay.
Okay. You ready for this?
I may have a follow-up question. Okay. But okay.
I'm going to run a 4.940.
Get out of here.
Listen.
Out of here.
I'm going to do it. Just watch.
Okay. We are going to archive this,
absolutely.
This audio.
Oh, no. That's fine.
And next year, when you're lined up, I'm going to call this into question.
That's fine.
4.9.
Yes, sir.
You ran a 5.9 this year.
I know. Okay. That's a second. All right. Our technique, someone needs to teach us how to run.
Well, that's the problem.
how to start, for one thing. Yeah. The middle part and how to finish, because I did a poor job finishing. I still have the strawberry, as we used to call them, on my leg.
Do you really feel like you left a full second out on that field?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Because I'm disappointed in what we did.
Well,
I thought you and I both should have done better than we did.
I think we probably should have too. But then I remember that I'm not built for speed.
Of course, there's this conversation we had.
I'm built for comfort.
You're built for strength. That's what told me.
Well, that too.
And I told you I was built for endurance. I love the.
All right, so you run a mile while I bench press next year, and we'll see how that
goes.
There
you go. Okay.
All right. Well, Let's see what you do between now and next year
to
ensure that you run a 4.940.
I'm going to do it. I promise.
Okay.
I'm guaranteeing it. Okay. I'm calling my shot like Babe Ruth.
Okay. Well, check back in a year from now, Falcons fans, and let's see where Daniel's at. I'm going to guess somewhere around 5.8.
You're giving me a tenth of a second improvement in a year.
That's all I improved.
But I'm saying we should have done better. I didn't improve.
Well, that's not on me. I improved.
You think I could get Thomas's attention if I ran a 4.9?
I mean, possibly. Because you are kind of cagey.
Yeah.
You know, you get out there, like, you know, during warm-ups, you got pretty intense.
Yeah. I was ready,
like,
you were pacing.
You had the heart rate up. Yeah. You were, like, ready.
Yeah.
Me, I'm on the sideline sipping coffee and tweeting. I'm like, oh, is it my turn? But, we'll see.
Okay.
I'd love to see you run a 4.9.
Really?
That would be amazing.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Go ahead and run a 4.9.
I'm going to do it.
But, I'm going to try to do better than I've done in the past. My only
competition.
You're
not going to put a number on that?
No, I'm not silly. Are you nuts? No.
All right.
No. All right. Well, Falcons fans, thanks for sticking with us this long. And thanks again to Matt Miller from Bleacher Report,
yes.
NFL draft lead writer. Awesome stuff from him. We'll be sure to get him on before the Falcons go on the clock in April.
Absolutely.
But we'll be back again next week for another edition of the FalconCast podcast as we continue to count down to the draft. Thanks again for joining us, Daniel Cox, Jay Adams. Talk to you next week.